This is 91.7 WHUS, Storrs, Connecticut, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It is November 2nd, 2016. My name is Ron, a.k.a. Peddlin' Ron. Welcome to Bicycle Talk. This is a show with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, please text us at 860-486-9487, or you can call us also at that same number. Or if you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. So I'd like to welcome you all to the show. It's November. Hey, November, here we go. We're into the fall season here in Connecticut, where it gets a little bit chillier out. Last week, we got to talk a little bit about how we deal with that with the proper clothing and with lighting systems. That's something we have to deal with every year. So we are seeing less daylight, and the bicycling outdoors is getting a little bit leaner than it used to be. But we still had some great, great days out there. There's still beautiful colors. And it's still a great time, always a great time to ride your bike. I'm going to begin with Ron's rant of the day. Okay, here we go, the weekly rant of the day. So this one's kind of an interesting one. It's called car horns. Yes, car horns. Every car has one. Every truck has one. Everybody's got a horn, but not very many of us on our bicycles have horns. But cars do have them, and the use of that horn was originally set up so that you could alert someone if they were pulling out in front of you, or if you were about to, you know, have some sort of an accident. You use your car horn to alert them of the fact that, you know, you're there with your car. Unfortunately, there are people who use their car horns. Let's go with the responsible way. A lot of people use their car horns very responsibly, and they will give you a friendly toot, even if you're in another vehicle, let's say a car, and you go to open your car door, and they're coming up behind you. They'll give you a friendly toot to let you know. But then there's people who use their car horns in a more, let's say, obnoxious way, and that is when they really lay on the horn, which is okay. Sometimes you really need to lay on the horn because someone doesn't see you and they don't know that you're there, and they need to give you an alert so you don't have an accident. Just bear in mind that horn was designed so that you could alert another driver of another vehicle that is a motorized vehicle that is completely enclosed, okay? And that horn was made to be very, very loud so that you can let that person who's driving that other vehicle know.
I'm nodding up and down with my whole body.
Yeah, she is. I got a lot of body movement here. That horn was designed to be used for another enclosed vehicle. All right. So very, very important. So it's really, really loud. Okay. Say you're a cyclist or a pedestrian and you're out on the street, and someone decides that they want to use their horn to alert you in some way. Let's be a little friendlier with it, okay? Because it's really loud. And if you're behind a cyclist or even a jogger on the road or a walker coming up or whatever, if you're coming up on them and you use your horn and you lay on that horn, it's deafening. It's very, very loud. I don't know what the decibel is.
And really frightening.
But the big thing is it's frightening. And Fran makes a really good point here. Because that frightening part, it makes us, what would happen if someone came up behind you with a horn and laid on the horn? You jump, right?
Or just yelled.
Or just yelled.
You startle, and you physically startle. Because you're designed to startle because that could be a lion roaring or a bear roaring, and your response to that bear roaring is you freak out, you have an immediate stress response, and you're supposed to run away from it.
Right, and you have a big rush of adrenaline.
Yes.
And so you get this startled feeling. Now, not a big deal if you're, you know, able to control it, but some people are so startled that they will actually lose control of their bicycle, or
yes,
at least jump or weave or whatever.
Yep.
And they could jump in your direction. So you could have an opposite effect of what you're trying to do here.
Or any dangerous direction. in the mid, into another car, off
right.
the road,
exactly.
in the opposite lane, anywhere.
Anywhere. So let's be responsible with our car horns here, okay? Don't lay on the horn. Give me a friendly toot. And of course, you know, I have this conversation too many times and probably rant about this a little too much, but I'm going to anyway because I think we have to get the point across to people so they understand exactly how we see it when we are out on our bicycles without the protection of a big metal box around us. And, you know, the friendly toot from a couple hundred yards back is so responsible. And that's what I'm going to talk about here. Responsible, okay, not irresponsible. Irresponsible, get right behind them, lay on the horn. Really irresponsible, really stupid, really obnoxious. And you will probably get a not so positive response from the person you're doing that with. And why wouldn't you? I mean, that's that. You would feel the same way if someone did that to you if you were outside of a vehicle and they tooted your horn. So my rant of the day is car horns, car horns, car horns. They're really, really loud. Now, what we need to design here in the bicycle world, so if any of you entrepreneurial types are out there and you like to invent things to respond to this sort of situation, is make us a horn that we can blast them back with or something that will make it so that they get the idea that they did something that was probably not so kind.
Well, that's revenge. I was thinking in the opposite direction. You know what would be really, really cool? If you could have a car horn
mm-hmm.
that said that had a little logo on it, it had a bicycle on it, and it was for tooting at bicycles, and it would be at a lower decibel.
Well, that'd be great, but that would be it's a great idea.
I shouldn't say it out loud. I think it's a fantastic idea.
Well,
it's going to get patented.
It is a fantastic idea, but then you'd have to sell it to the car industry, and you'd have to get them to understand that, you know, there's two different ways to alert people.
VW.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Especially a car manufacturer who builds cars that are used all over the world, and they could use a little good press these days.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that would be another way. But anyway, sure, if you're in the car industry and you want to design a horn that's pedestrian and bicycle friendly and be the good guys of the world, go for it. Let's do it. Let's do it. Great idea.
Are you listening, Elon Musk?
Yeah. So anyway, car horns. Car horns are a tough thing. You know, we love you out there. We want to ride our bicycles with you. We want to share the road with you. But please, please, please be responsible. Really, the person who comes in behind, I mean, there's lots of stuff that you can look at online of people who have similar rants to mine and talk about, you know, terrible things happening to them when they get blasted by a horn without a warning. And, you know, it makes your heart jump out of your chest. I mean, it really does.
And it's supposed to.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
But it is. But again, it is supposed to with another vehicle that is enclosed. And we are not enclosed. We're out there. We're in the world.
Right.
And we certainly cannot hear you coming up behind us because of the helmet situation that we have, where we're wearing a helmet and we have straps and holes in the helmets and they make a lot of wind noise, so it's very hard for us to hear you.
And cars are quiet.
And cars are getting quieter. Some of them are completely quiet. Some of them are electric and they're hybrid and they make no noise at all. You get into a city street and a lot of these hybrid cars switch back over to electric power and you cannot hear them coming behind you.
Right.
So we need to know you're there, but be nice about it. That's all. Just be really, really nice about it.
And most of us, if we know you're there, we're going to get over.
And things that you need to know as a driver of a vehicle, as a person in a car or a truck, know that that we have hazards. We have door zones. Those would be the places where you have parallel parking on a street and someone opens their door into you. Not a good thing. Now, if they open their door into your car, you simply take their car door off and the rest is history, because it certainly is the responsibility of the person who opened their door into you to pay for the damages. But if you hit a cyclist that way, you can do some serious harm to that cyclist. The first thing that will probably happen, from what I've seen, because I have seen this happen, is the cyclist will be dislodged from the bicycle. because the bicycle is stopped immediately, and they fly over the handlebars, and then they land somewhere in front of the car door on the street, which is, again, a problem. But the other thing that we have besides door zones is we have potholes. Potholes are, you know, they're all over our roads. It happens. The roads deteriorate. They get water in them. You drive through them with a heavy vehicle. That heavy vehicle then makes the pothole bigger. And, you know, it's a science project is what it is. It's an engineering and science project. Good time. We also have things called sewer grates. And drainage grates that are out there. And fortunately, most of the civilized world has figured out that you turn those sewer grates the opposite direction of the way that a cyclist would be riding their bike. But then you don't get your front wheel stuck in there and then end up doing the same old fly over the handlebars trick. But they're so most of them are easy enough for us to negotiate. But a lot of times they're really rough, and what you'll end up doing with them is you'll have to. I'm not going to say swerve because I really don't like swerving. I think swerving is a problem, and I'll address that in a moment. But we'll have to fade out into the road a little bit. We're going to get into your lane when we do that. We're going to have to share that lane. And then we're going to come back in. We also have trash and debris. It's all on the right-hand side of the road. And the trash and debris, where does it come from? I'm telling you right now, it does not come from the cyclist. It comes from cars because people throw their trash out. And they'll throw things like bottles out.
Glass.
And glass. And glass is a real problem because glass will give us a flat tire, therefore causing us to come to a very abrupt stop, maybe possibly losing control of the bicycle if it's a front flat. And that's going to cause yet another problem there. And then more often than not, lanes are not wide enough to be shared. So we get into a tighter city situation where the traffic is obviously driving a little bit slower. And if we don't have any room between the car doors that may be opening in front of us and the center line, we're gonna have to ride out in that lane. And you're going to have to be patient. And laying on the horn is not going to get you anywhere. It's really not going to help at all. You have to keep give a cyclist 3 feet of space when you're passing us also. Now, somebody said to me the other day, they said, wow, 3 feet, that's a lot of space. You know, it really isn't that bad. And I actually looked at a state highway situation. And if you take a look at a state highway where there's a shoulder on the side of the road, and Fran can confirm this and others that ride will understand this, you'll see people that will pass you and they will cross way, way over the center line to get around you when they really didn't need to go that far. So I did a little experiment the other day. I have a large vehicle that we use occasionally for doing, you know, local dump runs and hardware store pickups and all. I have a van, which is a fairly large vehicle. And I took that vehicle and I measured the width of the vehicle and the width of a standard state highway lane. And of course, then you have the shoulder. If you take your outside wheel on your vehicle and you put it on the yellow center line, just put the tire on the yellow center line when you're driving down the road, we have lots of space. In a state highway situation. On a back road, it's a little tighter. But if you're on a big road, you don't have to go all the way over into the other vehicle's lane in order to get around us. Just put your tire on the yellow line. Very, very simple. And it really will make all of us a lot safer if you can do that. Every road's a little different, but the state highways in the state of Connecticut and a lot of state highways in different states have a regulation of just exactly how wide they have to be. And that usually gives us plenty of space. So just be aware of it. And we will, of course, try to be aware of you being behind us. But, of course, if you let us know, it makes it a lot easier for us to know that you're behind us. There's another thing, and I mention this law all the time because it's something that a lot of people just don't know, the bike laws in general. And why would they? Because we have a very, very poor communication system in letting drivers know. If you're listening to this and you work for the State Department of Transportation in any state, and because we do podcast, and I know that some of you do listen to this on podcast, if you're listening to this and you work for any of those organizations, I have the best suggestion ever. Pedestrian and cycling laws are changing all the time. And what's happening is because there are more pedestrians and there are more cyclists on the road than there have been in the past, because more people are using their bikes to commute, we have a changing demographic. We have younger people who are not, they're moving to cities. They are not buying cars. They are choosing bicycles or using themselves as a pedestrian in order to walk places and transport themselves. And if, but those who are still driving vehicles or insuring those vehicles or registering those vehicles or getting a driver's license or a renewal on their driver's license, we get notifications in the mail. And in that notification, we are told it's time for you to renew. I just got one of these the other day. It's time for me to renew my registration. Okay, there it is. It gives me the information, how I have to do it, whether I can mail it in or I can do it some other way. There's different ways of dealing with it. Why not put a very simple slip of paper in to every car registration renewal and every driver license renewal that gives the list of all the current updated cycling and pedestrian laws? Because we don't know. As drivers, we don't know. The last time I was tested on this was when I was 16 years old. And I'm not 16 anymore. It was a long time ago, many, 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 many decades. And that's the way it is with a lot of people. So the thing is, no one could possibly know the laws unless they're given the information. So me talking about this on a bicycle podcast or radio show is great because it's going to get information out there. But I do know I'm preaching to the choir, that people who are listening generally tend to be cyclists and not as much motorists. So anyway, this is, if you know someone who works for the Department of Transportation, if you are someone who works for the Department of Transportation and you have a meeting where you want to sit down and come up with some great ideas about how to make the streets safer, this is a big one. This is a really big one. It's all about information and education. That's really what makes the difference. So here we are. We're out there and we're dealing with, this is kind of an interesting thing. I did a little research on this, and sidewalks, let's talk a little about sidewalks too, because this all kind of segues together. So sidewalks, they're really not a good place for a cyclist. So if you are the driver of a motorized vehicle and you feel like you need to dictate to the cyclist what the laws are and you don't know them, please don't tell them to get on the sidewalk, because the sidewalk is not where we belong. Pedestrians belong on a sidewalk. And while I was doing this research, I was looking at this, and get this, if you are in a place where there is a sidewalk on the side of the road and you are a pedestrian and you are walking in the road, you can get a ticket for that. Wherever there is a sidewalk, you have to use the sidewalk. You should not be in the road. How about that? Now, I don't know how that applies to runners, because that's kind of an interesting, that's an interesting thing, because if you're a runner, I know that I spent a number of years running, and when I was running, I tended to want to stay more onto the asphalt because it's a little bit softer than the concrete is, and the concrete just tended to get a much harder surface that you were hitting against, and the asphalt was definitely a little more forgiving to your legs. And the question is, and if anybody knows this, they certainly can give us a call and tell us what's going on as far as this goes. You can call us at 860-486-9487 and let us know. But the that's a really good question. Is a runner required to stay on a sidewalk if there is a sidewalk present? Because a pedestrian is, by almost all state laws. I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. So anyway, this is We kind of segued way off of this horn blowing rant, and we're just getting into a little bit more information here, just to let you know. So be kind with that. Be kind with the horns, please. Just pay attention. Be responsible. I think responsible is probably the key word here, and what we really want to do. So be aware of that situation. I also, in doing my research, I was looking, and there is, if you go to CONDOT, that's CONNDOT, that's the Connecticut Department of Transportation's website, and that's I think that's a .org. I'm not seeing it here, but anyway, if you go there to the Connecticut Department of Transportation, you're going to find a really cool segment of it, and it is the bicycle and pedestrian dashboard, and they talk all about different things like sharing the road and what cyclists need to know and what drivers need to know and what pedestrians need to know. It's a great little information piece, and there's let's see just here. I was on earlier today, and just I was amazed at how much information the Connecticut Department of Transportation has put out. So big heads up to the Connecticut Department of Transportation. They have a Share the Road page, and the Share the Road page, they have a motorist tips for drivers, starting with drive cautiously, reduce speed when encountering cyclists. Don't tailgate, especially in bad weather. Recognize hazards that cyclists may face and give them space. We're talking about those potholes, those manhole covers, those drainage grates. By the way, those manhole covers, just so you know, and those drainage grates, just so you know, if it's raining out, it's like riding on ice. They're very, very slippery, and they can take us down very quickly. And if we go down, we may go under your wheels. So please, if we just look out for us, please. We really would appreciate that. And then look out for cyclists coming the wrong way. But that goes back to a previous rant about riders that ride against traffic, and that just opens another category of problems. But anyway, you do have to be aware all the time. Realize that when you're driving a motorized vehicle, you are not just looking for another motorized vehicle. You're looking for all of the hazards out there, all of the different things that could possibly distract you. And the best way to do that is to turn your cell phone off and don't use it. I would be a big, strong advocate on that one, or at least put that thing somewhere where it doesn't distract you when you're driving. Yield to cyclists. Bicycles are considered vehicles. Cyclists should be given the appropriate right of way. Allow extra time for cyclists to traverse intersections. Yes, we don't have 400 horsepower under our hood. We have a quarter horsepower under our hood. That's how fast we can accelerate. Some of us are stronger than others. Some of us will be able to get through intersections faster than others will. But everybody is a little bit different, so be aware of that and give us a little extra time when we're at an intersection. We need that. Be considerate. Scan for cyclists and traffic in intersections. Do not blast your horn in close proximity to cyclists. There we go. That's the horn rant from earlier today. Look for cyclists when you're opening your doors. That's the open door problem that we have to deal with, because people will actually swing their doors open when you're to get out of their car after they parallel park their car and not realize that there's a cyclist coming up because they didn't look in their rearview mirror. And so, you know, you have a problem. I have a friend who he had a great little incident with a car door, and very accomplished cyclist, former bicycle racer, very, very good about handling himself in tough situations because of it. And skilled cyclist. And he was going down Main Street in a local town, Willimantic, Connecticut. And he was going down Main Street, and he's riding along, and someone flipped their door open on him without knowing that he was there, and he hit it point blank. And when he did, he didn't go over the handlebars because he was able to slam the brakes at the same time and bring himself to a stop. But once he came to the stop, of course, it was a very abrupt stop. So he fell to the side. And what side did he fall into? The guy's lap. And he sat right in his lap, still attached to his bicycle because his feet were still on the pedals on the bicycle. Okay. And he looked at the guy, and the guy looked at him, and he went, "Nice door." So, you know, it was a very funny thing, but it was not a funny thing. You know, he could have been very hurt, but because he was able to handle the situation, he just looked at the guy and said, "Nice door." And the guy said, "I'm so sorry." And he said, "I know." He said, "Please just look before you open your door the next time." And they had, you know, kind words to say to one another, and he rode off, and no one was hurt. And so it was fine. But yeah, watch out for those opening doors. Those are really tough. Now, if you're a motorist and you're passing a cyclist, pass with care. Leave. Now, this one here at the Connecticut DOT says leave 4 feet between you and a cyclist. 3 feet is the law. That's what's required. But 4 feet is fine. If you want to be generous, we'll take your generosity and we'll take your kindness. That's always nice. Wait for safe road and traffic conditions before you pass. There's a big one. We had a rant on that one. A few weeks back about people who take this huge risk in passing a cyclist or a group of cyclists on the road when there's another motorized vehicle coming the other way. And they're willing to risk a head-on collision with this other vehicle coming the other way, who is generally forced to pull over and almost go into the ditch so this person can get their impatient self around you. Anyway, just be aware, you know, make sure you've got room before you pass. You'll get there. Really, trust me, you'll get there. Check over your shoulder before moving back in. That's a good one. How many times has that happened? We had a group ride where we were out in Lebanon, we were riding along, and we've had a few different ones where the driver of the vehicle decides to come over right after getting by without any regard to the fact that they have not completely passed the cyclists. And unfortunately, the two times that it was done with me on a group ride, and I was at the head of the group because I'm usually leading the rides, they were doing it intentionally. They were doing it as a ha-ha, thinking they were very, very funny about it, which is, it's not funny. It's not funny. You know, life-changing incidents are not funny. You got to be sure of that. Note, it is illegal to pass a cyclist to turn right immediately after. Now, there's another good one. Same person who hit the car door many years ago, he and I were riding our bicycles into Willimantic again, coming into town, and we were riding at a pretty quick clip. We were not side by side. We were riding one behind the other, and we were coming into town, and a car passed us, and once they passed us, they made a right-hand turn into a gas station, and it was immediate. My friend in front of me, again, accomplished cyclist, I too at that time was pretty quick and alert as I was racing my bike a lot, he just said, "Turn right now," and he yells it out, and we just turned with the car, and we went right into the gas station with them. Fortunately, able to make that correction as so quickly, and with me sitting right on his wheel, you know, it could have been a real problem if I had not responded that way, or if he had not responded that way, we would have run right into the side of the vehicle. You don't understand that, you know, 10 miles an hour on a bicycle, that's a slow speed. 15 miles an hour on a bicycle, it's kind of normal. 20 miles an hour on a bicycle, if you've got an accomplished cyclist, they're probably going that fast. So when you go around them, you have to understand that there's no turning to be done. Wait, just wait. Wait for them to get through where you're trying to turn and then turn. You don't need to turn immediately after you get by them. And then watching for children. This is all on the state site. This is very nice. Children on bicycles are often very unpredictable. Oh boy, are they ever. Because children tend to weave. They're not taught how to ride a really straight line. You need to be able to expect the unexpected and just slow down. And they're kids on bikes. They don't know. You know, you can't get angry with them. They need to learn. But please don't be belligerent about it when you're teaching them. Be nice about it. Educate them. Don't expect children to know the traffic laws. Why would they? Because they're not taught traffic laws, because they're not driving a motorized vehicle. That's another problem that we have in the state, and it's something that could be addressed in all states, that why do we not teach children traffic laws at a very young age? If they are going to operate a bicycle or any vehicle of any kind on a road, they should know traffic laws. It's really, really simple. And because of the size of children, they're harder to see. They sit lower. So keep your eyes open for them. They may be on a sidewalk or they may be in a road. You know, you just got to keep your eyes open. You just don't know where they're going to go, if they're going to dart out in front of you. So anyway, these are things that are shared here by the Connecticut Department of Transportation. And those are some really good things. The 3 feet law, we talk about it a lot. I will continue to talk about it a lot because it's just never going to get completely through everyone's mind as to what this is all about. But it's an important piece. You are required as a motor vehicle driver and a person of driving a vehicle, you are required to give a cyclist 3 feet of separation when you're overtaking or passing them. Failure to do so could cause a motorist to receive a fine under the current motor vehicle code. And that code is 14-242, if you want to look it up. It's the law. That was passed a number of years ago. And that is, unfortunately, those of us who are very strong and heavy into bicycle advocacy, we look at it as it's kind of a problem law, because the problem about it is that it's not enforced. So if it's not enforced, then why do they have the law? Well, guess what? When you're a person driving a car and you have an accident with a bicycle or a person riding a bicycle, and you didn't give them the 3 feet, and that's why you had the accident, because you came too close to them, you then get the fine. So because you basically broke the law by being too close to them. So it's a good law. It's kind of a ridiculous law at the same time, because it's not enforced. So that's a problem. Big shout out to all of the law enforcement agencies that are located in different towns for putting their officers on bicycles so that they get to see this a little bit better and they get to experience exactly what we experience as regular cyclists and commuters on the road. Very, very important. The other thing that happened, it was a year ago this past July, so it's been over a year now since this law was passed, but there was a law passed in the state of Connecticut that said not only it's all in connection to this 3 feet law, okay, not only do we have that going in our favor, but we also are required by law to stay as far to the right as determined safely possible by the cyclist, not by the driver of the motor vehicle. Drivers of motor vehicles, please don't tell us the laws. You don't know the laws unless you do know the laws, and then you can tell us all about it. But I would probably find that most of you are not aware of this. So you need to understand that we have the right to take a look in front of us and see an obstacle that we do not want to hit because it is going to cause a safety hazard, and we have the right to go out and get further out into the road. We are to stay as far to the right as safely possible as determined by us, not by you. So that's a big deal. Now, there's a second part to that law. This was a really, really important part, because now, so you have a person driving a motorized vehicle and they go, but if I pass them, I'm going to cross the center line and it's illegal for me to cross that center line. So when do I get a chance to pass them? Because, you know, I can't get around them. They're out in the road too far because the shoulder is full of glass or debris or bad potholes or cracks in the road. And they're out. And if I try to get around them, I'm going to cross that center line. Well, the second part of this law, really, really important part of this law, is that it is legal for you to cross the yellow line if you are in this situation. It is no longer illegal. So you are not breaking the law by passing us, which is really a good thing. So that's a really important thing to know. We've talked about the tips for the motorists, and now we're going to go a little bit more to the tips for the cyclists. Again, this is on the Connecticut the ConDOT website, the Connecticut Department of Transportation website, and you can look this up, and it's really great. And again, shout out to the Connecticut Department of Transportation for putting this out there and letting people know this is great. This is really, really good stuff. So the same laws that apply to motorists apply to cyclists. That's the big one right there. You need to respect the laws of the road. You need to be able to understand that it's for vehicles, not necessarily motorized vehicles. So on the road, you obey all traffic control devices. That means stop signs. That means stop lights. Anything that is used to control moving vehicular traffic, because you are moving vehicular traffic. So no blowing through stop signs, please. You just don't want to do that. No blowing through stop lights. You're just making, you're causing a problem for all of us by doing that. Use hand signals to indicate stops and turns to other users. So this is another one. There are standard hand signals that were put into effect many years ago. I think that if you go back to when I got my operator's license to drive a car, the hand signal to turn to the left was to simply stick my hand out the window of the driver's side of my car and point to the left, and I could take a left-hand turn. The hand signal for me to turn to the right, should I not have lights on my car and ways of telling traffic behind me or in front of me that I'm turning, was to raise that hand straight up into the air and with an angled elbow straight up, so like I'm waving to someone. And that was to make a right-hand turn, because I can't really reach all the way across my motorized vehicle and stick my hand out the right window. But on a bicycle, you can. So guess what? You can use the pointing in either direction as a way of telling people which way you're turning. Now, why do I like the pointing to the right instead of the waving up on the left? Because every time I've ever waved up on the left, people wave back to me. They're not knowing that I'm making a right-hand turn. They're just thinking I'm being friendly, which I am friendly. I'm a friendly guy, and I wave to a lot of people when I'm out riding my bike. But when I'm driving my bicycle, riding my bicycle on the road, I am very, very deliberate about letting people know where I'm turning, and I point, and I point with a very stern point. I stick my hand out very quickly, and I point hard and let them know. The other thing that I do, and this is a really cool thing once you start riding more in traffic, is you need to identify with the person behind that motorized vehicle that's driving that motorized vehicle. You need to look straight at them, look at them in the eye, look at the steering wheel of their car, look at them and let them see you looking at them and get their attention. It's really important. If you can't get their attention, just point at them, point straight at them so that they look back at you. It really works. It's actually a pretty good method. So you want to do that too. You want to make sure that you identify with the driver of the vehicle that is coming towards you. If you are in a situation where you are trying to make a left-hand turn off of a road that you are on, do not do it from the right-hand lane. Please move out. Put your signal hand out. Stick your arm out to the left. Work your way over towards the center line of that road. And then make your, and all the time you're pointing to the left, letting people know behind you, so that the driver of the vehicle, the motorized vehicle behind you, can actually simply pass you on the right. Now they know what you're doing. It's all about communication. This is the key here. It's all about communication. If you can communicate well in traffic, you will do well in traffic. If you communicate poorly, you're going to have a big, big problem. So you need to pay attention to that. Always wear a proper fitting helmet. Now, this is a great one. And I almost had a rant on this because we were riding the other day and I saw it and I went, oh my God, this is going to be a rant session. I can see it coming. So this gentleman was riding his bicycle and he was riding, I think we were on the rail trail. Fran and I were riding on the rail trail on Sunday. And this gentleman is coming the other way, and he is riding his bicycle, and he has a helmet on his head. Very nice, very responsible. The buckle's not clasped. He's got two straps hanging down off of his head and off of his helmet, and the helmet's not attached to his head. It's on his head, but it's not attached and latched on. So this is another one. You need to you need to wear the helmet snug, and you need to wear it level. This is another thing. When I'm fitting people with helmets, and I often find myself in bicycle shops because of my job, I find myself in a bicycle shop, and there will be a customer coming in the store, and they will be wanting to try on helmets, and so I'll help them and assist them with that. And people have a tendency to want to push the helmet back and up so that their forehead is open and exposed because they're wearing it like a fashion hat, not wearing it like a helmet. You got to wear it like a helmet. How do you know if you have it on right or not? Very, very simple. All you do is you look up. Don't just look. Just roll your eyes up and look. If you can see your helmet when you look up, then you're wearing it properly. If you can't see your helmet, it's sitting too high. It's a really, really simple way of doing it. The other thing is those straps that are on the helmet, they need to be snug. They need to be pretty tight, and you should be able to get no more than two fingers above your brow. So you can, again, that's another way of looking for where the helmet sits flat, and you should really barely be able to get a finger underneath the helmet strap. That's how tight it should be. Because if you have the helmet on your head, you went out, you invested, you bought a great helmet, the helmet's cool, it's comfortable to wear, it's really nice, it's fashionable. If it's Fran, it's fashionable, very important. If you're really happy and proud of your helmet and you don't wear it snug, it's not going to work. So you're going to go flying over your bars. Let heaven forbid that you do. Hopefully it's not going to happen. But if you should have to use the helmet has to be on your head tight. And that is just so incredibly important. I would say that I'm going to stick my neck out here. I would say that 80% of the people that I've ridden with don't have their helmet on right. And that's so let's go home when we get home tonight, if we're listening to this on the radio or on podcast, and we're going to go over and we're going to grab our helmet and we're going to go in front of the mirror at our house and we're going to put our helmet on our head and we're going to look at what I just spoke about and we're going to see, gee, are my helmet straps loose or are they tight? Does my helmet sit level on my head or does it sit back on my head? Let me see if I'm doing this right. And just, you know, a couple of minutes in front of the mirror and you'll have it all adjusted out just right and it'll work great. So before you get on your bike, put your helmet on your head and go ride your bike. No matter how short the trip, wear your helmet. Please wear your helmet. Make sure that your bicycle is safe. Okay, there's a simple one. Make sure your tires are properly inflated and the brakes and other running gear like derailleurs are working properly. Of course, you want to have you would not want to operate a motorized vehicle that wasn't operating safely, that didn't have brakes or whatever, or had flat tires. You wouldn't do that. So do the same thing with your bicycle. Very, very important. Make sure your seat is tight and your handlebars are tight, because if they're loose and they turn when you're trying to turn, and well, you know the rest of the story there. It's really not a good thing. You want everything nice and snug and tight on your bike. If you're concerned about this and you're not mechanically in a place where you're good with mechanical aptitude, just go down to a local bike shop. They're really friendly there. They will help you out. They will address this for you. They can help you with your helmet. They can help you with your bike. They can identify things that may or may not need to be taken care of on your bicycle or with you. And they can be very, very helpful. They're there for you. They're these guys and girls that work at bicycle shops. They live and breathe bicycles. That's why they work there. They're not doing it for the money. They're doing it for the love of the cycle. And that is, I'm a 40-plus year veteran of this industry, and I know this because I work with these people all day long and have been doing it for many years. So this is, they are there to help you. They are not your enemy. They are your friends, and they will give you lots of solid, positive advice. And it's for your safety. It's all a very good thing. Next thing on the Connecticut DOT's list is to ride with traffic. We've spoken about this a number of times. Always ride on the right-hand side of the road with the flow of traffic. use the farthest right lane that heads to your destination and stay as far to the right as practical within that lane, or as the new law states, as safely possible within that lane. Slower moving cyclists and motorists, stay off to the right. Don't ride more than two abreast, and don't impede the flow of vehicular traffic. And when it's necessary to form a single line to allow vehicular traffic to overtake or pass. So if you're riding two abreast and you're in a really tight, tight area, and even though you have the vision, there's a law actually in the state of Connecticut where if you have 200 feet or 200 yards, not sure exactly on that, someone can correct me on that if they wish, of a visual, both front and back, it is legal to ride two abreast in the state of Connecticut. So, again, if you're driving that car, please don't tell us the law, because, you know, you need to look it up. You need to look it up and see. So anyway, if it is a very, very tight trafficked area, though, just form a single line. That's all. Just go to a single line. You know, who was it that told me the story? I don't know if I can remember this, but someone told me a story once about riding in Europe. And they said that it's either that or I read it somewhere. But they said the 80-year-old women that are riding their bicycles with the big fenders and baskets, and, you know, they're using it to go down to the market and they're buying their food and they're riding back. They ride the straightest, most unbelievable lines they've ever seen. They are just, they don't weave. They don't swerve. They really ride an incredibly straight line. So practice this. Ride a straight line. If you ride with a lot of people in a group, you are schooled on this all the time. Riding a straight line is very, very important. But if you don't, if you just go out and ride by yourself, I've got some great little things you can do. My favorite is if I'm on a road that actually has a white line on the side of the road. Back in the day when I had my bicycle shop, I had a bicycle racing team, and I had these young junior riders that I was coaching and getting them really into cycling, and you know, it's a fun thing. And they would come in, and it would be the middle of the summer, and they were off from school, and they were bored, and they were out riding their bike, but they were bored. And, you know, they said, "What do I do today, Ron?" And I said, "Well, today's an easy day, you know, on your schedule." And they said, "Yeah, I know, but I just can't get motivated to do it." I said, "Okay, so go out and chalk your tire." And they'd look at me and go, "What?" I said, "Go out and chalk your tire." And they'd ask me what that meant, and what it simply means is you go find a road that has a white line on it, and over time, the paint on the white line gets chalky. It actually starts to break down, and it gets chalky. So if you ride your bicycle on it for a long period of time, your tire will start turning white, and because you have a black tire on your bike. So if you are really good at it and you ride that incredibly straight line and stay on that white line the whole way, you'll accomplish chalking your tire and getting your tire white. Now, why would you do this? Because it teaches you how to ride a straight line. That's why it's really important. When you're riding that super straight line, when you're going down the road, you are predictable. Predictable is what works when you're riding with other vehicles. Very, very important. So it's a great drill. Learn how to chalk your tire. Now, how do I do that? Okay, good question. The best answer for that is to not look down. Okay, yeah, you might want to glance down occasionally to see if that tire is nice and white and chalky like I asked you to do, but you need to be looking at where you're going. So you need to look at least 8 to 10 feet in front of you and look at it as that's where I'm going, that's where my wheel is going to be, and you'll stay on that line. It's very important. When you start looking down, you start wiggling and weaving. And the old mountain bike thing is that the mountain bikers say, if you look down when you're riding your mountain bike, that's where you're going to land. So it's you never, you know, you always have to anticipate what's coming up in front of you. So shout out to mountain bikers who figured that one out a long time ago. And, you know, it really does work. You don't want to look down. You want to look forward. You want to look at where you're going. Always look at where you're going. It makes a lot of sense, both on your bicycle and in life. So anyway, so you don't swerve and you don't ride between parked cars. Why would you do that? Check for traffic before entering streets at intersections. What a great idea. Of course you would check for traffic. You would do that if you were in a motorized vehicle. Why wouldn't you do it on a bicycle? Of course you would. And then anticipate the hazards and adjust your position accordingly. Okay, what does this mean? Okay, I'm going down the road and there's a set of railroad tracks in front of me. Now, those railroad tracks could be perpendicular to me, so I'm just going to hit them, and I'm going to hit them hard, and they're probably not going to be super smooth when I go over them. And so how do I deal with that? Well, you look at it and go, oh boy, there's tracks ahead. You could either slam on the brakes and come to a screeching halt and have everyone confused at what the heck you're doing, or you can simply ride up to those tracks and you can lightly lift yourself up off the saddle of the bike. So I'm not talking very far. I'm talking only about an inch or two, just elevating yourself so that your knees and your elbows are now bent and they are now taking the shock. They're absorbing the shock as your bike just floats over the tracks. And yeah, it's a little bumpy that way, but you'll have control of your bicycle and you'll be able to get through it okay. Adjusting your position accordingly, going down a hill, you probably want to pull yourself a little bit further back on the saddle. You want to drop your arms down. If you have drop bars on the bike, you want to get down low, get down in the drops so that you lower your center of gravity a little bit. You can change your position around the bike and that will make a big, big difference as to how much control you have of the bike. The other thing I tell people, I get a lot of comments about, how quickly I can descend. And they say, but the roads are all bumpy and I get all freaked out by it and it really bothers me. Well, if you take on your descent, if you simply put your feet basically so they are parallel to the road, so you're on the pedals parallel to the road, and you lightly lift yourself off of the saddle. Once again, only need to be about an inch off of the saddle. When you're going down through a very bumpy area, the bike will just simply float through and your body will absorb the shock through your knees and elbows and you'll have a lot more control of your bicycle. So these are things you would do to anticipate hazards and adjust your position accordingly. Be visible. Big thing. Wear bright colored clothing that provides a contrast. Big help here. You can see there has been a really, really popular thing that has happened over the years. People are now wearing this, we like to call it, please don't hit me yellow clothing. It's the same clothing that you'll see highway workers wearing now and others that are anywhere near any kind of, I even see it on the construction workers. When I see the construction workers around campus here, they all wear this high visibility yellow. They wear t-shirts, they wear jackets, and now of course we have cycling jerseys and we have jackets for that too. That high vis, as much as it's not much of a fashion statement, it sure does work. It sure does catch people's attention. And they make vests also that you can get. You can wear a vest that will be made out of that same high-vis material. Works better than orange, by the way. Definitely works better than orange. But since it is hunting season here, you should know that if you're in the woods, the orange is the color of choice by those who enforce the law in the woods. So use a white light in the front to see and to be seen at night. We talked a lot about lights last week and the different type of lights you can get. I'm a big, big fan of those flashing lights if you're looking for a light to be seen with. And then, of course, there are some headlights that you can put on your bicycle that are as powerful as any motorized vehicle out there. There's just an amazing collection of lights that's available now. The technology is through the roof. You use a red light on the back of your bike or on the back of your helmet in a low light condition. Now, these are laws, by the way. People don't understand that if you're out after dark and you don't have lights on the front and back of your bike, you can get pulled over for that. So be aware of the fact that if you are a vehicle and you are on the road and it's after dark, you need to have lights on. It is a law. So be very, very careful about that. You can use reflective tape or clothing. They make crazy products out there that reflectorized tape that you could, if you were a regular nightly commuter and you were spending an awful lot of time
out there riding at night, you can get this tape and you can put it all over your bike frame, and you can, your bike will literally glow at night. So, and you also, I had touched base on this one a little bit earlier, announce yourself by making eye contact with motorists. That eye contact thing, that is such a huge communication issue, and it's something that really makes a big, big difference as far as them seeing you, knowing you, and identifying with you as a person on the road. So it's all real, real important stuff. So those are great tips. There are also tips here for pedestrians, besides the tips for cyclists and the tips for motorists. There's even a road safety for motorists and equestrians on this page. So you will find that, you know, if you're riding a horse and you're having to deal with cars, I can't imagine it, because the people who ride horses out here and ride on the rail trail have enough of a difficult time riding with bicycles on the rail trail. And if you're a responsible rider and you know a responsible equestrian, you've probably had the conversation, you know how to get yourself around that. So I'm gonna touch base on that just for a second, even though it's a little bit off of the subject, but it does pertain to bicycling on our local rail trails, which we have a couple of really just unbelievable dirt rail trails out here that are shared by equestrians and pedestrians and also cyclists. And so you will occasionally come upon a horse or a person on a horse when you're riding your bike. You got to announce yourself. You've got to let them know you're coming. If you're coming up behind them, you need to just shout, slow down, first of all, slow way down, shout out, let them know that they, and make sure that they acknowledge that they have heard you before you get to them. So give them a yell, let them know what's going on, and you know, announce yourself, because the horses are not as, they're a little confused by bicycles. Bicycles and horses, they don't mix super well if they're startled. And you will find that you will have a best friend in that equestrian if you are announcing yourself and slowing down for them. They're riding a very large animal, a very heavy animal. People can get hurt here. Lots of, either the rider of the horse could get hurt or the person riding on the bicycle could get hurt. So please respect the equestrians and announce yourself and let them know you're there. Let it know it's happening. So that's just a little piece there. Again, other things that are on this website, you'll see the Connecticut State Bicycle Map is there. The Connecticut Statewide Bicycle and Pedestrian Transportation Plan is there. And, you know, there's actually a couple little public service announcements there, too, which I'm going to have to screen because we might have to get them on this radio station that we're put out there. One is bikes don't have fender benders, and we'll go together just fine. So those are all there, and they're on the Department of Transportation, the Connecticut State of Connecticut Department of Transportation website, and they are... And if you just search there for Share the Road Connecticut, you will find all of this information. They did a great job. Big shout out to them. Okay, we're getting close to wrapping this thing up. I've got one more shout out because, actually I'm going to have two, so I'll have it next week too. But there is the Connecticut Bike Walk Annual Dinner, Friday, November 11th, 2016, for our annual dinner and silent auction. It is happening at Central Connecticut State University in New Britain, Connecticut. It is available. You can get more information at www.bikewalkconnecticutorct.org. So you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you need to reach us, you can send an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is 91.7 WHUS Storrs, Connecticut. Thank you for listening.